welcome to the Journeys of Peace podcast. And we have the first of our Lenten series. We have Joey Keith with us today, and we're going to start by saying welcome and share three things about yourself that we may or may not know, those of us that have been around LCP for a little while.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. I would say, number one, I have a theater degree, which you may or may not know, but I work in computers and technology. I first started as a programmer and then switched over to the hardware side. I've never taken a computer class in my entire life, with the exception of typing one in eighth grade.
What else?
Let's see. I can remodel your house for you if you want. You name it, framing, roofing, drywall, electrical, plumbing, I can do it all. And again, I have not gone to a trade school. I was in a rap group when I was in my teen years, and we wrote and recorded several albums. The recording engineer that recorded our albums had bought a HUD home that needed to be completely gutted. And so we traded labor hours where we learned all of these trades for recording studio hours. And as a result, I'm pretty handy around the house.
One more? You got one more?
Yeah, sure. Back? Three, I am an extremely emotional person. Love, you've heard Lydia say in the prayers before, we love love. Love, kindness, selfless acts. Whether it's in a movie, Hallmark commercial, I will immediately break down and start welling up. The girls, actually all three of the girls, it's a joke because I would turn it into a laugh when I feel verklempt and caught up. It's a laugh that comes out, and the girls would all three sit up, look around, dad's crying again. So
you have a history here at LCP.
I do.
How did you get connected? And just like, what are some differences that this place has meant in your life?
Sure. Fall of 1979, my parents started here. They had shopped Grace Lutheran and some other local churches, and this seemed to be the one that they fit. My brother was in the LCP preschool right away when we moved here. I was started Sunday school and immediately started in the Peace Pipes Choir. Every Wednesday we would have choir rehearsal. And then after that, I would sit with Anthony Johnson and Eric Johnson downstairs, Sherry and Jerry's kids, Bob and Deb Nygren's kids, Madeline and John, and we would play He-Man and G.I. Joe while we waited for the adult choir to get done with their rehearsal. From Sunday school, confirmation, youth group, mission trips, lock-ins, graduation, it's been a part of my life throughout my entire life. The only time that it wasn't was when I left for college for 6 years, and I would only come back for Christmas, Good Friday, and Easter. And it was very emotional times. I remember coming back for Good Friday, and I would just, again, emotional ball. The overwhelming, you start thinking about what you're actually watching and this person who's done these things for you. And I could never stop it. And my mom always said, it's because you don't have this regularly. It's not an active part of your life right now. You need to bring that back. And so I graduated college, and I didn't come back right away, but I got a handwritten letter from Sherry Johnson in 1999, who said that the church misses you and you probably miss the church, and I think it would be a good fit if you came back. We had a lunch together, Jerry, Sherry, and I, and I committed to being in the LCP band again in 2000, and that very next week, Jerry and I went and bought a drum set, and I've been back, and it's been a full time ever since then. So
one of the gifts of this community is seeing people, right? And the ability to have a handwritten note from somebody that you have a relationship with saying, I see you and I see you're not here.
And you haven't had direct interaction with in years.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Saint.
Yeah.
what a difference it makes.
It also doesn't surprise me with Jerry.
Yeah.
She would do that. But I think sometimes we don't think it's a big deal, but it is.
Yeah.
What was one dream you had as a kid?
First, I wanted to be a teacher. My dad was a first grade teacher for 30 plus years before he became a reading specialist. And I remember being in first grade, and every time they would hand out a worksheet, I would say, can I get two? My dad's a first grade teacher. He might want to use one of these things. So I came home, a completed worksheet and one for him to potentially use. I never asked him what he thought about it. I'm sure he thought I was just nuts for it. But that was the first thing I wanted to be. Actually, I did that all the way up and through college. I did everything except student teach. Before I realized I was doing teaching for the wrong reasons. I was going in for the line of my family who had done it before.
Yeah.
I wasn't really doing it for me. So the next thing I wanted to be was a pilot, but mostly that was because of the 1986 movie Top Gun
Top
with Tom
Gun.
Cruise. Yeah, definitely. Also taught myself to play drums on the garbage can and the freezer lid, the standing freezer in the garage, to the soundtrack for that movie. So
Well,
there's a
it's a
fun
good
fact.
soundtrack.
It really
Here's a
is.
fun fact. My cousin was a Top Gun pilot.
No kidding.
Yeah, just around that time. Okay, I did have a crush on Tom Cruise, but besides
Right.
that, it
So did
helped me understand what my cousin did,
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
pretty crazy. I mean, flying and landing planes on a ship out in the middle of the ocean,
Yeah,
it's insane.
I love it. All right, so you weren't a Top Gun pilot.
No, I wasn't. And then I guess the last thing that I always wanted to be was a performer. I was a singer, dancer, actor. I was the triple threat. I had it all. I could do it quite well. And I always saw myself at some point on a stage or a movie set somewhere doing
Yeah.
something.
How has your life been different than what you imagined?
It's been much different, actually. In ninth grade, I had to audition for the high school musical. It was one of the requirements. My dad had three requirements for us. We were going to take swimming lessons up until we were at the lifeguard point, and then we could decide if we want to do it or not. We had to go to college, and we had to audition for the musical in our freshman year once we were able to.
I'm going to talk to your dad about
You
that.
should, because
Okay.
I'm not sure how he came up with all of
Okay.
them.
So you tried out for the musical.
Did, yes. And I got in. I was one of four freshmen and the only male who made it.
Wow.
And that was pretty much game over from there. The next year, I auditioned again. And in my junior year, then I quit the swim team. I was a state swimmer at that point. I had to go make a formal apology to the coach for dropping out. But I did all three shows. I did
Wow.
the fall musical, the winter one act, and the spring play. For the next 2 years, and then obviously 6 years of college, I did shows, so I was
Wow.
ready to go in theater big time. My super senior year of college, my advisor for the theater side was starting a dinner theater in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, and I had signed a deal to be the box office manager, be in the shows, help put up the shows. This was going to be the start of everything, and that ink hadn't dried for a full week before I found out that my oldest daughter Daisy was on the way. And that changed everything.
Yeah.
So I opted not to go, obviously. And I also decided at that point that I wasn't going to do theater as a full-time
Wow.
job. I didn't want to pay for my own insurance. I didn't want to
Yeah.
constantly be looking where my next paycheck was going to be coming from. I wanted to
Yeah.
be in something and be a part of something that I knew that I could depend on. So I actually had a friend who was a programmer at a relatively new company that started in Woodbury here, and they were hiring a second programmer, and he said that I should come try to do this. Again, no computer classes, nothing. But I, for some reason, decided to do it, and I acted my way through three interviews before I finally got the job, which was shocking, and I couldn't believe it. But then
Then you had to do
I
it.
had to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
So I spent the next 5.5 months going to Barnes and Noble every night after work, oftentimes with Daisy as a little infant in a car seat,
Wow.
reading the books in the computer section, trying to figure out and learn how to do what I said I could do. And eventually I did, and I actually
Yeah.
got quite good at it. But
Yeah. Wow. I have lots of things about that. First of all, I feel like joy and shock, maybe, and sadness and a few other emotions all at the same moment. That had to be a lot.
It was my first real life-changing moment.
Yeah.
I had a few others down the line, but that was the first one that I was faced with. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
you have to make a decision that's not just based off of you at this
Right.
point. So.
Not all of our first adult decisions are that dramatic. But I think that's part of the crisis of adulthood is when you have to start saying, I don't just exist for me. I think of a whole bunch of stories in my life or my children's life or whatever that it's like something happens, controlled or not, you know, planned or not planned. You're like, it's not just about me anymore. It's interesting when you talked about like this is a if I keep acting or doing performing of some kind, you knew what that world meant, that there's not a steady, it's a gig economy. And I know people that have lived in that but they're not raising a family on
Right,
it.
right.
Right.
And I was fortunate enough that, you know, the dinner theater Deborah actually took off down there. They did it, they opened it in Door County. And I said, if you ever bring it to the Twin Cities, take,
Yeah.
count me in. And in the early 2000s, the travel industry wasn't fired up there. So they brought it to Hudson and I made a home and I got to do my side gig was
Yeah.
my side hustle was working at that. So I got the creative outlet. I still got to do for
Yeah.
many, many years, all of
Yeah.
the things that I wanted to do. But I got to do
But
it.
you don't know that
Well,
at the
that's true.
moment.
You don't.
You
No,
know,
you absolutely don't.
you're having to park it, this dream,
Yep.
right?
But you have to be okay with that. And
It's a fork in the road, though.
yes.
You know that this decision, I'm going this way or this way,
Right. Yep.
right? And something. And what was it like being a dad?
Undescribable. I mean, it was everything. It was.
I would say I kind of get now. You like being a dad,
oh,
so
absolutely.
I don't
I mean,
feel like
you look back on that. That's the thing, though. I don't know if it's just the time period or that I grew up, or if it was because I was a boy. But you never hear females say that. Oh, well, I have kids, I
yeah,
can get married, and boys never said that. That was
no,
not something. It was either just
right,
a foregone conclusion. Oh, well, I'm going to get married at some point and be a dad, but that's not my
yeah.
dream, it's not my focus. But
Yeah.
when you get to this point and you look back and now your kids are almost entirely all grown up and you've had all the experience, you can't imagine it being
Yeah.
any other way. That is the defining characteristic of
Yeah.
who I am, is those three girls. And
Yeah. Who taught you to be a dad?
Well, my dad was very good. He will tell you that he was very good through the sixth grade portion. And that's how
did he age out?
He only knew how to relate to
yeah.
kids in the elementary
right?
kids. So after that, it was more touch and feel on my own. But
yeah.
But yeah, my dad was always, he was a cook. He was
Huh.
clean. There were
Wow.
no traditional
That's great.
standard roles in our family. That
Yeah.
was mom ran the finances.
I love it.
Still does to this day. So he did set a pretty great example. And
how would you describe your journey of faith and what's been challenging and what's been life-giving about that journey?
I would describe it as ongoing. You never really know everything or understand it all. I think overall, it's been pretty strong throughout my life. Like Pastor Liz said on Wednesday at the Lenten service, it's always been a part of my family. I mean, we've
Yeah.
always been here at LCP. It's always been, we go to church, we do all of the things. So it's always been there. It's been figuring out what it means to me specifically,
yeah.
and that's another story entirely. I had a major life reset in 2008 when I went through a divorce, and I lost my kids. They moved down to Waseca with their mom, where
Wow.
her hometown was, so they were now 90 minutes away from me.
Yeah.
I was not an everyday dad anymore.
Yeah.
I had also made some pretty bad decisions and was in trouble with the law. I lost my marriage, my job, my dignity, my respect, my self entirely. I
Yeah.
bottomed out and I essentially wanted to give up at that point. And my mom was the one that suggested to me that I go and I talk to Pastor Tim Hackbarth here and just figure things out, figure out what the next step was. So I did. And I came in and I talked to him for a little over 2 hours. I spilled everything, told him all of the things that I've been through, all the consequences that have been coming as a result of it. And two things came out of that. He recommended to me that I start going to see a counselor. And the person that he recommended to me was actually pretty great. They were not only, the therapists at this organization were not only licensed psychologists, but they were also ordained pastors.
Nice. Yeah.
So I got to explore everything from two sides. I got to ask who, what, when, where, why I made the decisions that I've been doing and dig deep into finding out what that was from the emotional and the psychological side of things so that I could identify those things and not make those decisions again. But I also got to explore it from a faith side and understand how that faith or maybe lack thereof helped played into making some of those same choices. And I did that for 4 years. My theater friends know it as what they call it, my dark period, because I didn't do anything. For 22 months, I did not go out. I went to work when I had work, and I came home and I went to church on Sundays. But I came out of it in a good place. But the other thing I did during that time was there was a Christian bookstore that was up in Valley Creek Mall at the time that I went and bought a daily devotional book. It was one for every day of the year, 365 days. And what I ended up doing was the first year I went through that, I would tape flag the ones that were super relevant and super powerful to me. And then in year two, I'll go back into the same book again. I started highlighting specific things in the verses that weren't just the entire verse, but what specifically is standing out to you. And then I did it a third year. And the third year, I started writing the margins because by then I had transitioned out of that dark period. And now things were starting to look different to me. So what verse may have been relevant to me 2 years ago, I would write why that's no longer the case or why it's different to me now. And doing all of those things and getting to explore both through counseling and that personal reflection really gave me an identity of who I am and what my relationship is with both my faith and with God. And it really hadn't been defined, I don't think, before that. Like Pastor Liz says, if God was always there. You knew what you believed. You heard the stories. You did it. But until that stuff happened where I had to do that deep dive into who I was and what that relationship was, I didn't really know. I mean, I am who I am now because of that.
First of all, that's like super cool, not the bad part,
right.
but the way that somebody pointed you to exactly the right person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thank God for that.
Step one, yeah.
Right. But also the sense of like, your intuition to do this journal and to, or this devotional and use it kind of as a journal for 3 years, like mapped your life a little bit, gave you perspective of your own journey. Because I think in those times we lose so much perspective. We lose perspective about who we see ourselves to be, who others see us to be, and who God sees us to be.
Exactly. Yep.
I have a whole disruptive chapter in my life when I'm going through a divorce. And one of the deep things for me that came out of that was God doesn't keep score. God isn't up there with the tally, make us think we have to work for God's love. And like when that flipped, everything flipped.
Yeah.
So what I'm curious on is, how would you describe like the difference between going to church and now having an identity of faith?
Well, and that's the thing. You see church differently now. You're not just going through the motions. You're not just doing the attendance. You're hearing the word. You're hearing the scripture and processing what that specifically now means to you right now. Right now. Not what it even meant before, but what it means to you right now and how that can help you going forward. I just think you're more of an active participant
I like that
in things
when
you understand that it directly impacts you.
I just have to imagine God sitting wherever God is sitting, smiling. Because it's like, that was my hope all along. We're doing this together. I think for me being a parent, I have a little different perspective now.
Sure.
Because it's like, I just want you to flourish.
Yes.
I just want you to flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I'm like, I don't care how that is. I want to help you and I want to get out of the way when I have to.
Yep.
Right. But we got to figure this out together.
Yep.
And I think there's a little bit of, that's what I think God is like in those moments.
Absolutely. It's the, you know, they're going through the motions or sitting stagnant and not how can we get you to move?
Yeah.
However that is, so that you succeed, that you're thriving.
What was it like parenting and all that?
Yeah, it was not easy. I say it's not easy, but it also helped. Those moments of the weekends then when you do have the kids and it allows you to get away from some of that stuff that you're constantly focused on and you're trying so hard to get right and make sense of, that in those moments that you can just be with your kids and feel the love and all of the things that come with that, I think they help more than anything. But it's also a motivating factor. They're there again and they're reminding you that this is why you're doing things. This is why you're putting things right. This is why you're making sure that you're doing the right things and that this isn't going to happen again, so that you can be a good example for them as well.
Sometimes we need a force outside of ourselves to be that motivating.
I couldn't agree more.
Factor.
I think most times we need that.
Right. Yeah. Gives you hope.
Oh, many things. My kids, obviously, hearing their voices when they call, or watching them perform in a choir concert, or
going to state,
or going to state and watching them excel at their their sports. My wife, and just how much I'm still head over heels in love with her after 12 plus years of being together. Music, movies, a smile. I heard a saying this week that hope can give you a smile, and a smile can give you hope. And I thought that was pretty great. That stuck with me.
Yeah.
Spending time with friends or family, hanging out with a group of friends, and even a Hallmark commercial.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
You can find hope anywhere. You just have to want to find hope.
So what is it that makes some of those really ordinary things like a Hallmark commercial or a smile be hopeful?
For me, I would say it's because of my faith and my identity with understanding what that means to me now. Before I really figured things out, I think I still had that same emotional quality, but it wasn't quite on the same level. And when I did feel something, it was more guilt than where I should be doing this or that differently. And now it's reassurance and thankfulness, and just counting blessings for things. And knowing, having been through all the things that I have been through, that there always is hope. I mean, if it's in you, then it's there.
Yeah, I think we live in a world that often highlights the hard, the broken, and they're there. They're always there. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are some extreme things happening. But I think there's also hope is also living alongside it every day.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm curious, because I think the world, by watching the news, by reading the paper, by whatever, often highlights the other side.
Yeah.
I think one of the dorky reasons that at Christmas I watch all the like Christmas movies for, you know, whatever, is I think just like hope wins, love wins. There's sometimes it's like, it's these elements of relationships and love and care and seeing your neighbor and doing dorky things together and laughing and all those that actually are what I need to be reminded of.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's why Lydia and I always say that we love, because you can go through the motions of your day and get distracted by the news and everything else. But when you see those little elements there, it's just enough of a seed to just take over your entire insides. I mean, it gives you that motivation, that positivity that carries you through until the next time.
Yeah.
You see.
I will say art in all its forms.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what calls me into those things, right? Calls me out of the daily headlines into the human part of what it means to be community and see beyond the moment.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a different part of your brain, and it affects you differently, and it evokes different emotions and thoughts and feelings and creativity. And those are the things that often get suppressed with, I have to do the laundry and go to work and go to this activity. And
somebody told me this once, I don't remember who it was, but like, when you're fearing something, ask what's the value underneath it?
Yeah.
Where do you find that?
Yeah.
Like the fear is a signal that something deeper inside of you is being threatened or you're worried about. How might you tend to that?
Right.
Right. And there's something about being in touch with our feelings of not just taking the surface thing, but saying, what is it that's so important to me that I need to tend to it?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I learned through all of my counseling, is that those are, like you said, a signal.
Yeah.
It's a signal, but that's not what the actual underlying issue is. So
yeah. Right.
Identifying what that underlying issue is, why it's there, and tending to that is how you resolve moving forward.
And so, that's the joy of who we are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's coming into our fullness of who God created us to be.
Exactly.
Thank you for sharing this story. You're a regular fixture around here. And for those that don't know, Joey's around the behind the soundboard a lot of times. We don't, when you're not singing. And but I think there's something about this community that allows those kinds of stories to turn churchgoers to passionate people of faith that love their neighbors.
Amen.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.